This is PodTech.net. I'm Jason Lopez. The Wednesday morning keynote at the 2006 Gartner Symposium IT Expo featured Sun CEO Jonathan Schwartz, barely on the job 3 weeks as the chief of the company after taking the reins from Scott McNeely, who is now chairman of Sun. After the keynote, Schwartz joined a number of journalists for this press conference. Here's a podcast of that question and answer session.
Yesterday, Ed Zander was here talking about Java, how it's like probably the very best thing for handsets that's out there. Yet, in the same breath, his biggest probably launch in the history of the company is coming up with the launch of the Q.
Right.
He talked about that as this, you know, incredibly great product that that he will be positioning towards both enterprises and consumers. Yet it doesn't have an ounce of Java on it. How does, in the context of the challenges that you guys face, where does that factor in when you see customers doing that?
Well, a couple things. I don't think Ed has ever met a product he wasn't excited about, and that's his nature. I mean, he's an excitable individual. But just to kind of review the numbers, I think Motorola will sell 200 million handsets, and I think they sold 200 million in the last 12 months. I think 99% of those were Java phones. So I wouldn't dispute that he's excited about working with another partner, but I would also assert at some point that a partner that displaces Motorola's intellectual property with their own is probably a partner that Ed will view differently than he would view, you know, the phones that he's building and he's delivering into the marketplace. So I think, you know, let's let the data speak for itself. I think consumers have clearly demonstrated a preference for Java phones. I think carriers have demonstrated that preference as well, and we're glad to see Microsoft participate in the marketplace, but, you know, they're going to have to catch up to a billion handsets that we've shipped over the past couple, 3 years. You know, I wish them well.
One of the other things he said was that the U.S. is not a great indicator of the pickup of technologies like Java, that if you really want a strong indicator, you've got to go outside of...
And I agree. I totally agree, and I think when you go anywhere else in the world outside of North America... You see, I mean, you know, one of the things that we have a hard time understanding in the U.S. is most of the world will experience the internet on their phone first. Because all of you have expensive laptops or expensive digital audio equipment. That's not infrastructure that's available when you're in southern Brazil. And so the fact that most folks will use that handset to interact with the net really is a much better leading indicator of the future of computing. Because even, you know, Motorola is, again, a good example. Motorola itself will outship the whole PC industry. Just Motorola. They'll ship 200 phones, and last I counted, I think the totality of the PC industry was 150 million, 160 million PCs. So numbers at some point begin to speak for themselves. If you add up, you know, billions of handsets and billions of devices running Java that are being deployed in, whether it's across Asia Pacific or across Southern Europe or across Africa for that matter, that's going to have a big impact on the technology adopted in the enterprise, because consumers, as you and I have talked about in the past, consumers end up having as big an impact on the enterprise as enterprises, you know, elect on their own. So I think that's a big trend. The consumerization of technology is obviously a big trend, but also volume matters. And I think the volume right now has already spoken, and the volume is accrued to Java.
Next question.
Gavin.
Yeah.
Just you were talking in the keynote about developers are the leading adopter of leading UKs at the Sun, but they don't buy stuff, they kind of subscribe to stuff. So therefore, your kind of sales position has to move further up the chain. Like, so someone's paying for Sun stuff.
Absolutely.
So on that basis, why should, say, the people who are actually writing the checks on a feature basis or an offering basis, why should they pick Sun rather than, say, IBM or BEA or even JBoss has been getting a lot of, you know, traction right now?
You bet. What Sun will deliver to enterprises is systems innovation, which is all the components working together so that IT shops don't have to make it work together. And our ability to bring that to enterprises, pre-assembled but still leveraging open interfaces and open source, is a distinct competitive advantage. So, for example, when we can walk in with not only the most competitive hardware offerings, but we can walk in with an open source operating system, an open source file system that runs at scale for the smallest business all the way up to the largest business, that also runs on everyone else's hardware, you know, we're unique in that regard. We're the only company out there with an operating system, a middleware stack, a provisioning engine, and the hardware, both storage and computing, that can be integrated in such a way to lower people's operating costs, you know, allow them to run more efficiently. That integrated systems innovation is unique to Sun. Everyone else is going to say, well, you can pick and choose from all these different lists and go assemble something in your own data center. Well, I think from what I hear from customers, they don't want to do that anymore. But I think you make the right point, though. We put customers in a position where they can make a choice. And last I checked, in and of itself, that was a competitive differentiator that customers appreciate.
How closely are you, Jason Lopez with PodTech, Jonathan, how closely is Sun now working with the companies that make consumer products?
Very, and more than we have in the history of the company. Because all of those consumer electronics, I was just at CES, the big consumer electronics show. The fact that I was there should give you some indication that we're having a different set of dialogue. But, you know, I don't know if you were at CES, but you were there. You know, 28 football fields of demos. It makes Java 1 looks like a little coffee shop. It was just gargantuan. It was huge. And every one of them was promoting a device or a system or a platform that connected to the network. And so, you know, a reporter who was there at the time asked me, why are you here? And I said, because you remember this whole the network is a computer thing? We'll go downstairs and there's proof. And she said, you know, you're right. I mean, it actually makes sense now. So I think the evolution of those devices, frankly, the evolution of consumer behavior is very relevant to Sun. Because as you use your handset to, whether it's record an interview or take a picture or take a movie or inquire of your supply chain, that has an impact on our business. And so to the extent that we can help progress that innovation, that's also good for our business because it means those industries will become more mature. And instead of, you remember when we put Java on a handset, and I remember this actually, we put Java on a handset and somebody said, yeah, you may as well put Java on a gas pump. Well, you know, I can show you the gas pumps that actually show Java because they display ads to you while you're pumping gas. But more interestingly, I can point out the billion handsets that now run Java. And by the way, they all generate demand for what Sun builds. So I think that's only going to increase going forward, not decrease.
But you're also working with Google in some way, so we know you're supporting that consumer-oriented company. Are there other examples of consumer
Sony
products?
Working with Blu-ray. BMW working on their dashboards. A series of other automobile companies that also want to present navigation and consumer services on seatbacks. So Boeing on connection services, which is the, you know, connection into airplanes. So absolutely. And by the way, some companies that would surprise you because you don't really think of them necessarily as consumer companies. But, you know, FedEx views itself as a consumer company. We do too. We want to work with them so they can deliver, you know, the logistics services or office services that they think they can touch consumers on around the world.
Next question.
Sun's Basel Computer Zeit in Germany. Don't you think that at some point down the road, some forking in the Java technology might be inevitable? Because at some points, at some fringes of Java technology, it's already happening. Take, for example, the field of hard real-time applications. The Onyx, for example, is building a Java virtual machine that doesn't use a garbage collection and does only use a subset of the Java instructions.
Do I think forking is inevitable? Look, I think enterprises and OEM and consumer companies all have choices to make. For those customers that want something that doesn't deliver the principal value of Java, which is compatibility, there's lots of choices they can make. Java is all about compatibility. So do I think forking is inevitable? I think people have choices to make in what they buy. I think choice is a good thing. I don't think it's inevitable. I think it's a positive. We want to do what we can to try to maintain, though, the principal value proposition of Java. And those really come down to innovation and compatibility. We want to make sure that we ensure for that because that, again, is what will create the next billion devices.
Next question, Nicole.
You said in the keynote that one of your first access to call, like Mark Hurd, and Simon and a bunch of other people. Can you elaborate on that, like when you did it and why?
The first week, if not the first day, to make it very plain to all of them that we were interested in creating high-value partnerships, interested in serving our prospective customers, interested in partnering together in solving the toughest problems, which I don't see enterprises wanting to be solved by just one company anymore. I think they've all had the experience of having only one supplier, and I don't think that necessarily is a path toward the future. So, we've had active dialogue with some of those companies more so than others, but I think it's an opportunity to hit the reset button and say, let's get together, identify common ground, I mean, if you look at the Java community process, you know, that really began with not simply Netscape and Sun getting together, but the invitation to SAP and Oracle and IBM and a bunch of others, by the way, competitors as much as partners. So I think value and innovation comes, in some senses, from the unexpected. You know, we think that's worth investing in.
How did they actually be surprised to get your phone call, or is this waiting?
So I'll leave that to later, and you know, and obviously we've got lots of interesting dialogue going on with lots of interesting partners in the marketplace. And look, and I made the point in the Gartner conference, the fountain of innovation at Sun is not exclusively Sun's. Just go walk across. If you, in all sincerity, if you haven't walked, David's already been there. If you walk across the street and just go, you know, I was talking to a reporter from a national publication yesterday, who said I was stunned at the number of languages being spoken at Java 1. It has become a global movement, and that's something we want to honor and respect. And it just gives you an indication that interesting innovation isn't just about big companies getting together; it's about lots of little companies and individuals as well. So we're going to have continuing dialogue with all those companies. We think there's, you know, lots of interesting potential.
Next question.
Hi,
Pamela
with Bloomberg News. 3 weeks, I know, is not a long time, but you spent a lot, the first 3 weeks at least reshuffling the management. You made a lot of announcements about your team. You're about a third of the way into your 90-day review. So what's up next?
3 weeks is the third of the way through.
Well,
and always, everybody's always trying to compress it.
A month into it.
So look, change is a constant. And don't look at the changes made in the first 3 weeks as the definition of the final changes. There's, of course, more change to come because there's more market to go after. We're running comprehensive reviews of every aspect of our business, everything. And everything from, you know, where do we see growth in the marketplace to which industries do we think are the most attractive to, you know, probably secondarily, where are the areas of R&D that we're going to focus on. Because I think we've all got a pretty good idea that Java's relevance is only increasing, same for Solaris. We think the market opportunity on the hardware and the infrastructure side is, again, not going down anytime soon. So our focus is really around how do we best grow the company. And by grow the company, I mean not only top-line revenue, but bottom-line earnings and, you know, frankly, future markets as much as future customers. And it's a tough thing, I think, especially for the folks at Gartner during the Inquisition in there, to really understand. But developers are a leading indicator of our business's health. So we're going to invest in developer productivity and the future of choice and competition because that's what our customers ultimately buy in the long run. And they may think it's a gossamer thread. I think it's a little more obvious to us that there's a linkage between developer platform adoption and infrastructure opportunity.
Dan?
So Dan Farber from ZDNet. Basically, it sounded like the Gartner analysts were asking you to show them the money. And that your response was, well, the market is going to be huge. In fact, in our lifetime, as long as you're on Earth, you said, you know, it's going to grow hugely. So is it just fair to say that you think that because the market's growing, that the pie is getting bigger, that you'll get your fair share?
No, I do not think we'll just get our fair share for showing up. I think we'll get our fair share because we invest in the R&D that people want to buy. I think the era of IT companies that could stand up and say, because we resell everybody else's innovations, you should buy from us, I think will gradually go to the wayside. I think the innovators in the marketplace who create unique intellectual property, they have the best ability to go drive after the value in the marketplace. And I'll give you a few examples from some parallel industries. You know, there's a bit of a dysphoria around the word commodity in the marketplace because everybody says, well, how can you make any money? That's a commodity market. Well, if you've read anything I've ever written before, the biggest markets in the world are the commodity markets. I'll name a few of them. Banking, telecommunications, and oil. The companies that serve commodity markets are the largest companies on earth. Citigroup, ExxonMobil, you know, Vodafone, NTT Docomo, those are enormous companies. Every single one of the companies that does well in exploiting commodity markets has a huge R&D budget. Because commodities actually take an enormous amount of R&D to effectively monetize. If you can do that, and I certainly believe we're well on our way toward doing that, you can tap into a market which is, as commodity markets are defined, 24/7 perpetual global demand. That's what we're going after. And by the way, we think Java is a great leading indicator of that opportunity. It's showing up on handsets, dashboards, consumer electronics devices, as well as enterprise infrastructure. We think the demand for free and open source, secure and indemnified operating systems ain't going to go down in my lifetime. And so, like I said, it's not about demand for sun. It's about intercepting the demand, working with our partners and working with other technology suppliers to go after it.
Right. So it's a, you said it's about intercepting that demand.
Yes.
And you have confidence that in some time period you will be able to intercept enough demand to change the
so
company
you,
from
you know
unprofitable
from the,
to...
So you know from the discussions we've had historically, the best way for us to identify that demand isn't by hiring a $500,000 sales executive and telling him to go find a customer. It's far more efficient for us to distribute 5 million licenses of Solaris and then ask ourselves who's downloading it. So that's going to be the path that we use to think about how do we go serve the marketplace. And by the way, with that approach, we're going to cover a lot of customers that we may never touch directly. Because, look, developers don't want to have a sales rep call them. A CIO does. We've got to be good at honoring the distinction between the two.
Jason?
One thing about Sun seems to be that it has been a giant geek culture-oriented company.
Thank you.
And that it has often ignored what the financial community thinks about its developments. And you kind of alluded to that in terms of talking about the criticisms in the past and sort of forging ahead with what you know is going to work. Is that kind of what you meant today as well, is that if the financial community doesn't quite understand what you're doing, there's just going to have to be a misunderstanding there and you're just going to move ahead?
No, and I think our job is to explain to the financial community why we're headed the direction we're in and you know where we're going next. And I think our customers want that as well. So are we going to continue to be a company defined by innovation in business model as much as sales approach or partnering model as well as R&D? Absolutely. You can call that a geek culture. I'm not sure that necessarily applies across the spectrum of our employee base. Some people find that a compliment. Others would find that insulting. I won't tell you how I respond to that. But I think it's our job to explain not only to the technology marketplace but also the financial marketplace why are we investing the way that we are. I think we have an obligation to deliver at our very foundation. We're a for-profit company that's here to build, not an installed base, not to win a popularity contest with developers, but to win long-term business interest so that we can deliver sustainable earnings and a profitable enterprise. But when we look at that marketplace, we don't look at it in terms of what do we do tomorrow to go deliver earnings tomorrow. We've got to look at it, as any smart company does, over the long haul. How do we build the best economic return?
But it wasn't that long ago that you had some financial analysts calling for the breakup of the company and selling it off and that sort of thing.
Well, look,
and you just said that you have the smartest people ever at the company. So I'm just thinking that innovation is probably going to come even at breakneck speed.
Stay tuned. I think it will. And look, I think we get lots of free advice from lots of folks. And we're gonna take the path forward that we believe will deliver the best return to our shareholders and, frankly, to our customers as well. And, you know, one of the important things to understand about the analyst community, whether it's a financial analyst community or an industry analyst community, I don't think I ever saw an industry analyst say that the browser was going to redefine enterprise computing until after it happened. I don't think I saw any analyst say, we think, you know, open source is going to transform the planet before open source was transforming the planet. And so I think there's a lot of conventional wisdom. It's very tough to make money if you're just following conventional wisdom. And I think, by the way, there's some very big companies right now that are struggling with strategies that are anything other than we're going to drop our prices and hope business improves. That's not going to be Sun's business model. That's never been Sun's business model.
Next question.
Yeah. Just a quick follow-up. Earlier you were talking about how one thing Sun has is kind of taking components and making them work together so lighter shops don't have to. I wonder if there's a kind of a movement out in the industry to get open source at least to kind of take some of those open source components and make them work together so the lighter shops don't have to build them together and some kind of trying to start business around that. I wonder, do you see that as something Sun might get involved in as an opportunity?
Well,
to be getting more involved in open source and open source software?
Well, we're obviously already doing that. And I think
certification and testing parallels.
Well, I think we do that today with the open source Solaris platform and the open source components, whether they're the app server or the middleware infrastructure that runs on top of them. So, look, I think there's always two tensions in the marketplace. One of them is from among the community that wants to disassemble things and identify new ways to go build systems. That's called creative destruction. We think that's actually pretty valuable. The other is the side that says we only want to buy products that come preassembled. And look, Red Hat's acquiring JBoss for a very basic reason, because it will help them build a more robust platform. It may compete against some of their partners, but I think their customers have said, we want you to integrate all of these, you know, components together. So we think there's, you know, tensions on both sides. We want to deliver integrated innovation and a systems platform to IT buyers, but we also want to give the spare parts to developers because they may invent something we never expected. One of the core values of Sun is that innovation happens elsewhere. Don't fight it, because you're fighting gravity if you'd expect that not to continue.
But, I mean, something like, just to name Spices, for example, they're actually making business doing certification testing. So people don't have to do that, you know, trying to make it work out in the, you know, in their own IT shops. I mean, I take your point, you already have an open source stack. There's parts of the stack you don't own, like Apache Web Server, for example, where some customers might appreciate some doing the hard work.
And we'll qualify and certify those systems as customers identify them. Are we going to go into the business of qualifying lots of third-party components into our infrastructure? You know, unlikely. I think the path that we've taken with Postgres is probably a more measured approach to that, which is, what are the very popular elements of the open source community? How do we make sure that we do a good job qualifying them in a stack that Sun delivers? But, you know, I'm not naive enough to believe that we can make money adding value into Red Hat's stack any more than I believe we can make money trying to add value into Microsoft Windows. That's going to be up to the, you know, those two companies to do on their own.
David, if you could close us out, final question. We're hitting our time frame.
Sure. You were talking a little bit, before about how the consumer business is starting to drive your business, and this large consumer electronics show with tons of gear.
Right.
One of the big train wrecks in any consumer business would be if I couldn't take my CD and move it between my stereo and my car and whatnot. Now,
right.
You guys are trying to disrupt the stovepipe setup that we have now with digital rights management technology with the
right.
Open Media Commons. Interviewed Tom Jacobs from your Sun Labs, and he talked a little bit about how you've been speaking to the entertainment industry, and the entertainment industry is requesting an interoperable solution.
Right.
But 2 weeks ago, the top four record labels knuckled under to Apple and basically put jobs in control of digital online music sales. So how do you reconcile that? I mean, on one hand, you're saying someone's talking to the entertainment industry, and the entertainment industry is saying, we're ready to stand up for this. On the other hand, they seem to be buckling.
They're fickle people, aren't they? So I think what entertainment companies want is choice, and it's the same thing that consumers want. And independent of whether I personally believe in DRM, because frankly, they're my pictures, I'd like to view them anywhere. That I bought the movie, I want to watch it wherever I want. You know, independent of that personal philosophy, the reality is, and again, just using the Brazil trip as an example, they would be disallowed from deploying set-top boxes without DRM. So we have two choices. We could either stand on the sidelines and hope they could work it out, potentially to the detriment not only of consumers but also of Sun, or we could get into the fray and say, let's make sure that no one has the ability to lock consumers away from making choices, or entertainment companies or media companies from making choices. But I think, to the point you just made, volume speaks louder than any standard-setting activity. And that's why I believe, even though in the short run those four companies probably knuckled under, in the long run, those four companies are going to have a hard time fighting consumers who want choice. In the long run, consumers are going to have the single biggest impact on enterprise architecture as much as it's DRM or, you know, enterprise applications. So, again, that's probably a good place to close. We believe that volume changes the marketplace. We believe that the 20,000 folks over at Java 1 are transforming what enterprises will look like, you know, 2, 3, 4 years from now. The future of Sun is betting on developers and developer productivity, because that has an impact on enterprise productivity and enterprise, you know, market opportunity. But like I said, I'm not worried about demand. I'm worried about intercepting demand.
Thank you very much, everybody. If you have any specific follow-up questions, there's several folks from the PR team here that can get you the answer.